All right, three ways to make no work for you, right? That's where we're at here today. On our blog post article, if you want to read the article, it is communication skills, three ways to make no work for you. I'm going to skip past the first two to one of my favorites. We're asking the question, would it be horrible if we sat in this section? Now, one of the things that I love about this particular story is I was at a conference and Walter O'Brien was speaking. Walter O'Brien is a Scorpion. Walter's claim, and I have no contradictory evidence to counter that claim, that he's got the highest IQ ever recorded. There was a television show called, I think it was called The Scorpion, a long time ago, supposed to be inspired by Walter O'Brien's real life, where he and his team of super smart people solve the world's problems, would come to your rescue. And so we're at this conference, and Walter's there, and Walter is a ridiculously smart dude. I've run across him a couple of times. We're in his restaurant, and they got this, there's nowhere to sit, and they got this section blocked off. And so somebody got to talk to him and get the waitress to let us sit in a blocked off section. Now, fortunately for me, I watched Walter walk over there and talk to the waitress, and she's like, no, you can't sit here. You can't sit here. And, you know, he tries to use IQ on her because he's got a super high IQ. And the answer is no. So I walk up to her and I said, would it be horrible if we sat in this section? She looks around. She goes like, no, you just got to be out here by 6 o'clock. That's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We just want to sit down and have a drink. You know, we don't want to be there for hours and hours. I cut the deal and we go right in and we sit down. So to my particular delight, the hostage negotiator succeeded where the world's smartest guy failed. So, Walter, if you're listening to this, I probably owe you a drink or a steak or something for telling that story on you. But it's a great example of why, in all of our ways to make no work for you, that people are comfortable saying no. People get into this no mode. You know, I've heard, we've had clients call us on the phone and say, you know, we're trying to cut this deal with these people and they're in no mode. N-O, no mode. Like they're going to say no to everything. And I'm like, awesome. Just change your questions. If they're going to say no, ask them a question that, you know, it's to your favor if they say no. Like, would it be horrible if we sat in this section? Or are you against this deal? Or is this a bad idea? So, you know, there's a sequencing for no also. You never miss the sequencing. Also in this blog post, which I would encourage you to subscribe to The Edge, the Black Swan Group's negotiation newsletter, because then you can go back and get into this stuff anytime you want. I mean, The Edge is a gateway to everything the Black Swan Group does. It's the gateway. Our website is a gold mine, and The Edge newsletter is the gateway. It comes out on Tuesday mornings. It's complimentary, which is not why it's valuable. Because stuff that's free doesn't necessarily mean it's valuable. You get a lot of free stuff you can't use. It's valuable because it's actionable. Short, sweet, concise, actionable articles. You can search through the archives. You can find exact article that you need that fits your circumstance. So subscribe to The Edge. It's free and it's useful. And this, a lot of what we're talking about today comes from stuff we've written in The Edge. Now, the first one, and situation drives strategy. In immortal words of Brandon Voss, situation drives strategy. No coincidence on the last name, by the way, for those of you that know. Had you given up on this project? I get communications on this all the time. I get a text. I can't remember if it was text or LinkedIn message the other day. Maybe even Instagram. The guy says, this is just short of a magic spell. Like, I get people to respond, and we cut the deal so much that it's like magic. It works so much. Situation drives strategy. You cannot ask somebody, have you given up on this project at the beginning of the conversation. It's out of context. It has, for it to be appropriate, for it to be authentic, it has to be on something they've already started, a communication you've already started. If I get a text message or an email from somebody and it's my first communication from them And they basically say, have you given up on working with me? My answer then is yes, because you're trying to manipulate me with this question. I never started, so I never could have given up. And you, if you try that on me, you need to learn the situation, drive strategies out of context, and people won't trust you if it's out of context. They're going to feel like, even though they're saying no, there's something wrong with this. Maybe it works on people some, but if you're opening your communications with have you given up on, I would ask you to rethink your approach to people. Come back, be a little more authentic, pull out of the manipulation. Have you given up on this project is for when people have ghosted you. When you're being ghosted, have you given up on this project is just darn near, not only it's close to guarantee, and nothing is guaranteed, but it's as close to a guarantee that they're going to respond to you. And on top of that, they're going to respond to you in 3 to 5 minutes of seeing it. And what we want you to know from the Black Swan Group is the system that you're using is perfectly designed to give you the outcome that you've obtained. What do I mean by that? If they're ghosting you, your communication strategy has led to them ghosting you. If they've stopped communicating with you, people don't stop communicating if they feel listened to. One of two things is going on the other side, and it's probably a combination of both. You're not listening. You're pitching. You're explaining. Ronald Reagan said, if you're explaining, you're losing. And secondly, there's a really good chance that they're losing power and influence on their side. Thank you very much. I love the applause. For those of you that are applauding, much appreciated. So you've got to take into account that you have been listening to them, and they may be losing influence on their side, which embarrasses them. They don't want to admit that. That's one of the reasons they're going to stop talking to you. A lady I was advising on negotiations in the early days before the book came out, we hadn't proved this concept. She's selling this guy on an investment. She's running an investment fund and happens to be an NFL coach. And he's ghosting her. And I said, send him a text that says, have you given up on investing in a fund? And she's like, you know, I never heard of that. But what the heck? I got nothing to lose. He's not calling me back anyway. So she sends him the text message, have you given up on investing in the fund? He responds immediately. That's what they will do. And she goes back to pitching before, which caused him to stop talking to her in the first place because she was pitching, she was explaining, she wasn't listening. And it was the last she ever heard of him. This is the most powerful one-shot reset you are ever going to be given, ever. But if you go back to what contributed them to ghosting you in the first place, you just blown your one-shot reset. What do you got to do when you reset? You got to get a that's right out of them. You got to demonstrate understanding. You got to make them feel heard. Give you another example. It's in the book, Never Split the Difference. Woman consultant. She's having a problem with a male CEO. She's perceiving that he's somewhat of a misogynist. He's giving her a hard time because she's a woman. He owes her money. He doesn't want to pay. He's making up all of these nonsensical excuses. We say, do two things. Send him a text saying, have you given up on settling this amicably? It's a version of, have you given up on this project? Now, he's going to get back to you right away. And at that point in time, you have to be prepared with a summary to get a that's right out of him. Make him feel heard. Make him feel understood, because it breaks down barriers. When you make somebody feel understood, when you get a that's right out of somebody, agreement is right around the corner. And the important thing about that idea right around the corner is you can't see it, but it's on top of you. It's right around the corner. Now, she doesn't think that he's going to call back right away because he's been so uncooperative and so hostile and so defensive and all this negative stuff. She's like, yeah, sure. I'm going to send him the text just to prove that you're wrong and he ain't getting back to me. And she's not ready with a summary. Sends him the text. He gets back to her right away. The sound of his voice triggers her again. She's not ready with a summary, which, by the way, keeps you from being triggered. one of the reasons you want to summarize the other side is because it calms you down. Not because so much as it calms them down, but it calms you down. Even uttering an attempt at a summary of their perspective calms you down. It's incredible. She's not ready for this. His voice triggers her again. She gets mad and it goes down the tubes and she doesn't get paid. So haven't you given up on this project? Have you given up on settling this amicably? Have you given up on X? Whatever that is, they will respond and they are going to respond in 3 to 5 minutes. Again, this is to restart a communication and be ready with a summary, because if they stop communicating with you, it's a really good chance your communication strategy contributed to the problem. The system you're using is perfectly designed to give you the outcome that you've obtained.
Right. How would you go about no orienting a confirmation question? Like, if I were to ask you, is it true you wrote Never Split the Difference? I know it's kind of true, but I want to confirm.
All right, so I'm gonna make you do the work, brother. You know, because okay. this is about accelerated learning. Mm-hmm. So, is it true? What would be the opposite of that?
Is it false?
There you go. Or is it correct? Or is it inaccurate? Mm-hmm. Now what? Now and then see it, running your brain through that also. Get your word, whatever word processing document you are out, you know, come up with one word, false, and then do synonyms. Mm-hmm. And the more synonyms that you think of for the same word, whether, you know, true, false, incorrect, inaccurate, that's actually good mental exercise. Mm-hmm. You get in more repetitions, more reps, as we say in a Black Swan group. That kind of practice actually makes you smarter. I'm going to give you one more hack on that. Handwrite it. Handwriting is an emotional intent, which you're doing right now. Very good. Very impressed. It's a good mechanism. It's another method for accelerated learning. Mm-hmm. And you get this down a few times. You practice it. No oriented questions may be both the simplest and one of the most difficult skills, because you got so many repetitions in asking yes questions. It feels baked into your brain. And, you know, kind of physiologically, my layman's understanding of neuroscience, it kind of is true, because the electric synaptic connections got this great substance named myelin wrapped around it. You got a good, solid, yes-oriented question circuit built in your brain. Building a new one, when you're trying to change a habit that's, you know, however old you are, 30-ish years. I can't tell, for example, you could be really healthy dude or you could just be young. But you got a lot of years asking yes-oriented questions. Mm-hmm. So, you know, synonyms, handwriting it down, you build a circuit that's equally powerful and they'll come rolling off your lips as easily as the yes questions do.
Mm-hmm. Would there be a better way to possibly get the same information, but not asking no-oriented questions, like maybe labels, mislabeling?
All right. So what was the question again?
So if I were to ask, is it true, yada, 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 would there be a better way rather than just no-orienting it? Would you use a better tool, for instance?
You know, like potentially a label, although, you know, there are times and I'm going to ask you to make it into a label for me. So make it into a label.
It sounds like you've written the book Never Split the Difference.
Right. Or it seems like, yeah. Sounds like, seems like, looks like, feels like. Yeah. And, you know, and so that is actually a great exercise. If you've got the yes question, you write it down. You want to substitute something else in. Substitute a couple of other skills. A no-oriented question, a label, that's that much more warm-up for your brain to get ready, give you that much more preparation. Because at some point in time when you communicate with people, you're going to find that one of those is going to hit them exactly right, depending upon their personality, the moment, you know, how much sleep they got, what they had to eat, their circadian rhythm. There's all these different things. one of those skills is going to hit their brain exactly right, and it's going to really unlock a truthful response. The floodgates of truth talk is one of our tenants, or clients once said. So I like your thinking, man. You're showing some agility in your thought. Very good. Very impressed.
I tried to come up with as many questions as I could last night, and this is the only one I really could that was really strong. But
all right, good. Yeah. Anyway. All right, good. We're gonna move on. Thank you for joining.
I appreciate you.
We have a lovely parting gift for you. You should subscribe to The Edge. All right, thanks, man.
Justin.
Nice talking to you. It was a lot of fun.
Chris, we have another question.
All right.
1 second. Let me look through the chat.
Do I need to bring you back up, or am I good as is?
You're good as is.
All right. Leaving me here on camera by myself. Till we get somebody else up, right?
Tej, I'm bringing you up on stage.
Hey, how are you, Chris?
How you saying name, brother?
Tej. Tej, like turn the page.
Tej. Yes. Thank you very much. I'm sure you go through that a lot.
I do. You and I spoke a couple of times, but now maybe this time, now Chris Voss knows my name. I love it. So question for you would be...
Hold on, we gotta get you on camera. I think I see you.
Oh, sure. Yeah, let's do it again.
We gotta see what you actually look like.
Sure.
Yep, there we go.
How are you, my friend?
Hey, I see you, brother.
Yeah, I didn't do my hair for you. I apologize, but I was just working all day.
All right, lay it on me. What do you got?
All right. So ghosting is a problem, but I think one of the worst problems, especially whether it's sales or deal making, which is what I'm in, stay in touch, right? The prospect, the other party, they want you to stay in touch. You don't stay in touch enough, you become forgotten. If you stay in touch too closely, you are annoying. Any suggestions on tactfully or tactically staying in touch and making sure you're moving the needle with them?
Yeah, so their last words to you is stay in touch. What's the prompt here?
Yeah, usually it's this question I get asked a lot. So it's usually we're in long sales cycles, pretty complex deals. They tend to like you, whatever, but they're not ready to move forward with the negotiation, the deal, the contract, or whatever. Stay in touch. They're not saying no, which I'd rather they ghost or say no because then we can move on. But stay in touch. So what would be, you know, a couple of ideas you might think of how to stay in touch? You know, that's
No. Let's rethink this. First of all, that's the same as a maybe, and you got to treat maybes as if they're no's. So that's where you got to proceed. After saying stay in touch, it's either flat no, they're not going to do it, or they have misgivings that you're not revealing. Mm-hmm. So you know that to be true. Like, are you keeping your percentages, your win rate percentage, your length of time to an outcome, and your percentage of successes on your stay in touches?
A percentage of stay in touches to success, yes. We call it more of a pull-through yield, meaning deals we put in the pipeline to success ratio, it's really high. It's about 85%. But this is more the...
You answered my question. Hold on.
Yeah.
Stay in touch as a category only. You can tell me what percentage of the stay in touch people, let's call them a zebra or a giraffe. Okay. Or a thoroughbred. I don't care. Mm-hmm. They're one profile. Mm-hmm. Stay in touch. Can you tell me what percentage of those close and how long it takes to close? Yes or no?
Yes, I could. Yes, I could. Yes.
Okay. So can you, so first of all, it's not a sin to not get the deal. It's a sin to take a long time to not get the deal.
Correct.
So if they're saying stay in touch, what do you know to be true?
That they're not saying no. They're somewhat amenable to terms, but whether it's timing or pressure or something on their side that's not motivating them to be enough to turn the dial to, let's sign the retainer.
All right, so they have misgivings, or they lack pressure, or they don't see the immediate value. Nobody says stay in touch on something that they see immediate value to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Otherwise, they'd execute. Either if they see immediate value to it, or if they have pressure to execute, they'd execute.
Mm-hmm.
So
good point.
The response is going to be a label. Stay in touch. Sounds like you have misgivings.
It's a good point.
Stay in touch. Sounds like there are other things that are pressuring you. Now, they're going to be much more likely to talk with you about the barriers than they are to talk about what's going to hook them.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are comfortable talking about what's getting in the way because they don't feel there's a commitment involved. So they're free. I'm free to tell you what the barriers are. It's up to you to solve them. If you want to say, well, what would it take to make this deal? I don't want to say that because it's going to back me into a corner.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to focus on the barriers instead. And you probably want to go after that with labels. So I would never, you know, and I got to tell you something. Nobody in my business development team goes into stay in touch mode. And a lot of what we've learned will be inspired by similar to Jim Camp, Start With No, 2002 book. I work with Jim. We collaborated over a lot of stuff. Me and his sons, Jim has since deceased. Their whole approach was to get somebody to make a decision. Yes mm-hmm. or no. But every conversation was designed to make a decision. And stay in touch is to avoid decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's point. A maybe, and it's never, never land, and you cannot monetize maybe. To some degree, you can monetize, we're not making this deal, because then you can move on. So mm-hmm. I would never go into stay in touch mode. I get stay in touch. What do you know to be true? You know they don't see the value right now. You know they're being pressured in other areas. You know they have misgivings. You know those things to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Throw it out with a label. Focus in on that. They're going to be much more likely to talk with you.
I like the take on that. Very good. I love it. Thank you. You're a rock star, yeah, man, but you know.
That was a great question. Thank you very much for the question.
Thank you. Pleasure.
All right. I can help. Let me see. There we go.
Thanks, Tej. Good stuff.
All right. We have another question from Willie David. Willie, I am inviting you up on the stage.
All right. I like the way this is working. It's like driving a new car. I gotta learn. Ah, there he is.
Hello.
Hello.
Read your book. Got your Black Swan manual right here. Used it a couple of times.
Oh, very
no
good.
Only
all
question.
Right.
What do you do when you get a yes? Specifically, you know, I asked at pizza parlor. They made a wrong pizza for me. They closed. I went back the next day and I used. Is it ridiculous to ask for a refund? And unfortunately, I got a yes. It is ridiculous.
Cool. So look, I mean, that's confirmation. It's hard for people to say yes. You know, I might follow up with what makes it ridiculous. Because mm-hmm. your gut instinct is like, if you're going to follow it up, your gut instinct is going to be like, why is it ridiculous? And unfortunately, why it makes people defensive. You got to be really careful. Why is this surgical strike? You don't want people to be getting defensive inadvertently. Are we in this? What are you in this for the practice? You in this to get your money back? Because mm-hmm. how much was the pizza?
Yeah, the pizza was negligible in price, but I was looking for a refund, and eventually we did settle. You know, it wasn't the price I wanted, but just to kind of understand the tactic of getting a yes to a no-oriented question, you know, where do you go from there?
It happens. All right. So at that point in time, if you're going to proceed, then I would mm-hmm. look at simply as a learning journey. unless you got like $1 million literally on the line, the only value to proceeding is for a learning experience. You know, whatever you're making an hour now, what and whatever's at stake, you're not doing it for the money. You might be doing it for the experience. Make yourself a better negotiator. Practice a little more empathy. So if they say it is ridiculous, what makes it ridiculous? Or potentially, now we got some little accusations audit stuff. You're familiar with our accusations audit, right?
Yes, yes.
All right, throw some of that out for me. Give me a little free scat a little bit. Isn't that what they say in jazz? You got a scat? Scat and accusations audit.
So an accusation audit. Looking at the chapters here.
No, don't cheat. You got to give me off time.
I'm trying to cheat. So an accusation audit in this instant would be stating the obvious, I assume.
Let me stop you a little bit. All right. So if they hang up the phone or if they put you on hold and they turn to one of their colleagues, what do they say about you?
This guy is ridiculous. This guy is asking for a refund.
And what does that make you in their eyes?
So that would be a probably someone who is less par or not on their level. You know, I'm probably, you know, assumed.
You're pulling your punches. If you got a minimum wage dude at a pizza joint who feels beaten up by you because you're asking for a refund the next day after you probably ate the pizza or probably gave it to your dog, you're a what?
Yes, I am a cheapskate.
Now you're on.
So I would probably do that for myself. I'm another pesky customer.
Yeah, there you go. Now you're getting on it. You know, so I probably seem like I'm another cheapskate, pesky customer pushing you. I probably don't realize, you figure out, I'm making more money than you are. You're knocking yourself out in a pizza joint. Making minimum wage, your mom's yelling at you, your girlfriend's yelling at you, you're under all kind of pressure. And here's the self-centered dude who probably eats caviar when he's not eating pizza, who's taking the time because he's such a cheapskate and so selfish. And, that's an accusations ought to run. Like, their amygdala, what is their amygdala causing them to say about you?
Fear. Okay.
I'd go after that if I'm looking to learn. Because the pizza parlor dude probably is some poor sap living in his parents' basement, whose mom's yelling at him and his girlfriend wants to know when he's going to get out of the basement. You know, whatever this dude is struggling with, right? If you're going to keep going, do a little bit of a tactical empathy exercise. And, who knows where it might lead you. If nothing else, you get a little practice.
Great. I work in risk and safety. We deal with a lot of customers. And so I'm on the front line trying to ask these customers new business. So, one of the questions we would ask is, is it ridiculous for us to come take a visit? And, of course, do late night DJ voice in that one because it's just starting out. Or would you want to do an upward inflection for a no-oriented question?
That's a great question. I also got a follow-up calibrated question for you. But, yeah, I do the upward inflection. I go, is it ridiculous for us to come out and take a visit? That's probably how I throw that baby out there. And the calibrated question would be a what? It's a little bit of what I was talking about with Tej before. I think, what stands in the way of us coming out and doing an on-site? Because people are always, they got to figure out the obstacles. I got to schedule this. I got to talk to my boss. He doesn't like people coming on site. You don't know me. Focus on solving obstacles. What stands in the way?
Okay.
And that'd be follow up. I'd go with that.
All right. Well, this is all I really have prepared for you today. You said you had a calibrated question for me.
Yeah. What stands in the way of us coming?
Okay. That's
calibrated what question? Okay. What questions are basically designed principally, or what questions principally designed to uncover obstacles?
Okay, and that's so, that's how we prepare. All right.
Yeah. All right, man. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Like, see, Glenn, see you using the stuff.
All right, Chris, we have two more. Could you fit in two more? Is it possible? Is it a ridiculous idea?
Is it Would a ridiculous you be idea? Would I be opposed? Look at you. Somehow you always get me to do stuff, Shay. I don't know what it is. You always get me to do stuff. Yeah, let's do it. No, it's not ridiculous.
All right, we have Peter. Peter, I'm inviting you up on stage.
Except there you How's are, you rock and roll.
Hey. Oh,
you're a good looking guy.
Yeah, well, I try. And I wore my hat because this head here, there's a light here. I didn't want to blind everybody with the reflection.
Hey, look, God only made so many perfect heads, right?
Exactly.
Rest and recover that.
Right on. Thank you, Chris, for everything. This is fantastic. My question, going back to what you were discussing earlier about shooting somebody a message, with mirroring, and because so much is about body language and inflection. So just in the use like a sponsorship package. So you've had a meeting with somebody. They said, you left us. We're going to follow up. He's like, I got to take it back to my team. You follow up a couple weeks later. Say, hey, no response. And then you like shoot him a text or you shoot him an email and say, it's like, are you no longer interested in the sponsorship? And, one, does that come across sounding desperate when there's no inflection or just out of the blue? And then part two is if they respond and with a simple no, we feel the price is too high. Now, if you and I were saying this in person, you're like, hey, the price is a little too high. I might come back with, too high. So when it comes to the type of communications through text and email, you don't have the inflection and I don't want, how not to sound like a parrot, I guess.
Right.
Would be the question.
All right. So whether or not you sound like a parrot is really more about you. It's not about you. Mm-hmm. Now, you do have a bit of an instinct here for that texting occasionally, you can't control tone. Mm-hmm. So, we got something we call softeners. Which principally softener, most of the times, usually, I'm sorry, I'm afraid. So where to mirror that, I might say, I'm sorry, ... too high, ? That's thrown a little bit of a softener in the beginning.
This also comes from me. I mean, I'm now doing more sales for our events. And, I've always said, I'm not a salesperson. Well, I had to change my philosophy and say, I am a salesperson. So, I've been, checking out the masterclass and it was fantastic, taking my notes. And then coming to this, I just feel, and this is me, but I feel it's like if I just wrote, I'm afraid, ... too high, it's like that is so outside my comfort zone.
Yeah,
that I'm like, just going right back. It's like too high. Like, how dare you question our pricing structure in that sense?
And well, that's your amygdala, bro. Your amygdala is whispering in your ear. Anytime anything that's new to you, until you've got your own personal data. As human beings, we're in survival mode is our default mode. And our default mode is our amygdala, which is 75% negative. So something is new that catches you off guard, that amygdala is going to whisper in your ear. It's an amygdala whisper. And you got to get some experiential data on your own to counter that. Now, look, I got my amygdala whispers in my ear. So, because I'm human. So get some experiential data on your mirrors in other places. I will tell you also, very much like the conversation we just had, we'll get back to you. First of all, learn to recognize what is a maybe. That's a maybe. The choosing not to execute now. Now, let's couple this with people's gut response is to question price. And rarely is it the price.
Mm-hmm.
It's the value. Or it's really the value. So somebody says your price is too high. Your response to that is, it seems like the value is just not there for you.
There we go.
Because they may, the gut reaction, you got to get them, they may not know what's wrong until you encourage them out of it with the appropriate label. their gut instinct might be telling them they may. So you need to articulate exactly what it is. Now they, now there's a possibility that their counterproposal on adjustment on the value, whether it's delivery terms, anything other than price, might actually make it more profitable for you. Now, it doesn't matter what percentage of time that is. Maybe it's only 1% of the time. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's only 1% of the time.
That's better than 0% of the time.
It's better than zero. That's money you're leaving on the table. You know, you got to give them the opportunity to counter-propose a deal that actually makes more money for you. And then on top of that, if you get them to counter-propose a better deal, you go, wow, brilliant. And then what are the chances that they're going to follow up? Because it was their idea that darn Skippy they're going to follow up. It was their idea. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's you know, that's that would be my cascade of advice for you on that. And I know eventually, like, this will be out in a video. It'll be linked to our bios. Mm-hmm. You guys want to go back and review this because, you know, the stream of consciousness that you're getting from me or any of the Black Swans is almost too fast to keep up with. So, you know, go back and review the videos. Take as many notes, max out the value on this app.
Right on. Thank you. So in closing, bend a little reality.
Who told you how to do that? Where did you get that idea?
I don't know.
Thanks,
thank
Peter.
You, Chris.
Pleasure,
thank you,
man.
Shay. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Chris, one more question.
Uno más.
And if we did not get to your question today, you can always join us next week. We will have Troy Smith on. And the topic will be sales negotiation strategies for non-confrontational individuals. But please note, you do not need to be in a sales position to join this chat. All of our conversations will have key tips that will help you improve your personal and professional communication skills.
And you better not like Troy more than you like me. Troy's like the crazy likable dude. Troy and Derek, people always like them more than they like me. And Sandy. And Brandon. All right, who's next?
All right, Shannon.
Hi.
Shannon. Oh, we got to get you on camera, Shannon. Interview mode.
Am I there?
You should just. There you are. I can see you. I can see.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Well,
thank you for having me. I really appreciate these fireside chats. I learn a lot from them.
Cool.
I was wondering today, is it ridiculous to ask you if you've ever experienced people thinking you are too apologetic when you use no-oriented questions?
No. And apology is, again, quote Brandon, situation drives strategy. It's sequencing. Apologize before you say something, not after. Like if you lay some bad news, confrontation, some sort of assertion, and then you apologize. It's like slapping somebody in the face and then apologize. Where the apology first, I'm sorry, gives them a chance to brace themselves. They will handle it. So, in our coaching, in Black Swan Method coaching, it has not gotten back to me that our liberal use of the words, I'm sorry, that anyone has ever said you seem too apologetic. And we clearly coach I'm sorry as precursor versus after the fact. And I think the sequencing is an important issue. Now, what makes you ask?
Right. Well, when I started a new job earlier this year, I was using no-oriented questions in some of my emails asking for information. Uh-huh. And I had one coworker who was a woman leader tell me that I needed to quit apologizing.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of bad negotiation advice out there that has been drilled into women's heads. A lot of bad advice. And I once was speaking to an entire group of women. I said, well, we can't, you know, we're going to seem weak if we do that. And I think that's a result of a lot of bad coaching and most of the bad coaching is women, you need to be like men, which is not true. And so I'm not surprised that you got that kind of feedback from a woman, particularly as women continue to break new ground in the business world. You know, there are women that have gotten ahead sort of in spite of the bad advice as opposed to because of it. And then consequently, they don't really have the data to tell them to be become aware that that advice was bad and they succeeded in spite of it versus because of it.
Sure.
So I'm not shocked to hear that you heard that. I'm encouraged that you heard it from another woman, because her giving that to you meant she was on your side and wanted to see you do well. And that's a cool thing.
Right.
And it also speaks a lot to your affect if you were conducting yourself in a manner that made somebody want to help you and mentor you. That's cool too. So congratulations for that.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, keep rocking.
I get such great information back when I use Nor-oriented questions. I'm always blown away by how helpful people want to be and how they'll answer usually like the next four or five questions I would have had with that single statement. So
that's the crazy thing about it, right? The follow-on advice probably saved you four or five implementation questions, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It does all the time.
Yeah, cool. Good for you, Shannon. Good for you for learning the Black Swan method and putting it into play.
Yeah, it's been fabulous. I continue to learn all the time from you guys. I'm grateful. Thank you.